The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you're taking us in, we appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. This is Kelly Bidlin, producer number 9, so much more than a producer. Did I miss anything last night? Should I know about anything? Anything?
I mean, yeah, there was a couple things.
Okay.
There were a couple things.
Maybe we'll catch a couple great baseball games. Maybe you'll catch me up in a bit. On the show today, Will Hill will join us. All his bets across the sports betting landscape. Paul Sporer on baseball. Todd Wright will join us. Talk some fantasy.
Yeah.
Want to do a fantasy segment?
Todd Wright,
the greatest sports talk radio host there ever was. I will not be debated on this subject. Up all night with Todd Wright. I was actually all night with Todd Wright back in the day on ESPN Radio. We will talk fantasy with him. But we begin, by the way, you see everything else we're doing. Power rankings. My power rankings last week was Fakakta. Just got to tell you that, Kelly.
I think I kind of did the same thing this week, though, where yeah. I was like, I was sending in yours, and I'm like, wait, I think I'm missing a team on mine.
This is very, very odd power rankings week. We'll get into that. NFC South odds with the Bryce Young benching, and now Andy Dalton at the helm for the Panthers. About last night, great 80s film, by the way, with Demi Moore. About last night, Atlanta and Philly. Oh, my God. Or as I texted, oh, my God. What was that? Nick Sirianni, we're about to talk. Let's go back to the first half, though, first. Scoreless game. Philadelphia has a 4th-and-4 at the Atlanta 9. This is late first quarter, Kelly. And Nick Sirianni decides we're going to go for it because he's allergic to field goals. Hurts incomplete intended for Goddard. We remain scoreless. Let's go to the second half. By the way, I just want to point this out because we were pointing yesterday when I was talking about previewing this game, I was mentioning the ESPN stats and information piece about how Atlanta, first week of the season against Pittsburgh, when they were in shotgun, they passed 100% of the time. When they were in pistol, they ran over 90% of the time. You had to be more creative, Zach Robinson, and they were. Cousins was under center in the first half, 16 of 31 snaps. So they mixed it up at least. Halftime score, 7-6. The Eagles were up. By the way, we'll get to the Belichick Manning cast about that sequence at the end. But 7-6 was the score at the half. Philly was up 9-7 Atlanta now after they got a field goal. Then 10-9. Let's pick it up late third quarter. 10-9 Philadelphia. Atlanta 4th-and-4 at their own 47. They're down a point late in the third quarter. I couldn't believe they went for this. They did, and they converted Cousins to Ray-Ray McCloud for 11. I thought that was way too early in a one-point game to risk that. But they get the 11 yards to Ray-Ray. Next play, Cousins to Darnell Mooney for 42. Somersaults into the end zone. Touchdown. Atlanta up 15-10. The two-point try fails. 1:21 left third quarter. Philadelphia, 4th-and-inches at the Atlanta 46. Now in the fourth quarter, Tuchus push. Convert, Hurts for 3. Ultimately, it leads to a 17-play, 70-yard drive that took 9 minutes, 34 seconds off the clock. That is vintage Eagles. Hurts from 1 out, 16-15 Philly, and the 2-point try was good. 18-15 Eagles, 6:47 to go. Then Atlanta has a 4th-and-1 at their own 41. Remember, they're down 3 now with less than 6 minutes to play. Bijan just gets popped behind the line of scrimmage, fails. And the Eagles get the ball up 3, and they go into Eagle mode. And if you're a better in this game on the Falcons, you're only thinking to yourself, wow, is this going to be another push if you had the 6? Are we going to lose this? What's going on here? Philadelphia, 11 plays, 29 yards is what the drive ends up being. It ends up taking 3:59. Elliott ends up with a 28-yard field goal. Obviously, everybody knows to make it a 6-point game with 1:39. But let us break that down, y'all. They get it to 3rd-and-1 at the Atlanta 18, up 18-15, 2 minutes left in the game. They're up 3. Atlanta has all 3 timeouts left. Now, Atlanta correctly, Kelly, tries to jump off sides, which is the correct play at that point, to give Philly an automatic first down so that they could reset the downs, knowing that it was likely the Eagles would get a yard and they'd have to call their first timeout before the new set of downs. Sirianni then correctly, let me give him his flowers on this. Sirianni then correctly declines that, which is the proper play by him, countermeasure. Philly does get its yard. Atlanta uses their first timeout. So with 1:56 left, up 3, 1st-and-10 at the Atlanta 17, that's where we are with Atlanta having 2 timeouts left. It ends up 3rd-and-3 at the Atlanta 10. Philly still up 3, 1:46 left. Atlanta now out of timeouts. If Philly runs and they were gaining at a clip of 5.5 yards a carry, Jalen Hurts was gaining at a clip of 6.5 yards a carry, and you know about the Tuchus push. They invented it. They perfected it. They can still count on 2 yards on that, or at least positive yardage no matter what. If they do any of that, which has worked all night, you probably advance the ball a yard or two, maybe even get a first down. But more importantly, the clock goes down 40 seconds. And then if you're Philly, you get to make a fourth down decision. Maybe you Tuchus push it again, a second straight time to get it. Either way, you do that and you extend the clock. The clock is the most important thing. The clock is your friend. The one thing you cannot do, and I know there were people on Twitter who were pushing back on this. They're like, oh, it was an easy little play. You know, it was in the flat. Saquon should have caught it. Saquon has had the most drops since 2021 of any running back. But forgetting that little note, the only thing you cannot do in that situation is stop the clock, because then Atlanta gets 40 more seconds and they can matriculate the ball down the field with 40 more seconds. That's 5 more plays. And what do? They call the pass, and the one bit of risk is that that you drop it, and that's what happened. And I immediately texted, oh my God, because this game was over, Kelly. This thing was more than likely over. Atlanta ball down 3. 1:46 left in this ball game. Let's call it 1:42 to be exact. And then, of course, what happens? Atlanta, by the way, then I have to stop there, because then Philly opted on fourth down to kick the field goal, which some people, and I think correctly so, would argue, and a lot of people will push back on this, if you kick the field goal there, which they did to go up 6 points, right, then Atlanta has to score a touchdown. If you don't kick the field goal there, and remember, let's say you ran a play that didn't get there, Atlanta, with now about a minute left, is not as incentivized to get the touchdown and matriculate the ball all the way down the field. A field goal will tie the game, will push overtime. So it was another reason for Philadelphia to go for it, because it changes the calculus for the Falcons as well. Now, you can't prove that, but it does. So there's that little detail too. Anyway, they kick the field goal. They go up 6 points. They go up 21 to 15, pardon me. Cousins, and then it's Atlanta, just like as if they had no problem going downfield. No pressure on Cousins the whole way. Cousins to Pitts for 11. Cousins to Mooney for 21. Cousins to Mooney for 26. At this point, I am actually texting, don't score too quickly.
Yeah.
Then Cousins to London for 5, incomplete. And then Cousins to London from 7 out, touchdown. 21-21, tie game. Unsportsmanlike conduct on Drake London for mimicking gunfire. By the way, there's a lot of people like, why is that a 15-yard penalty? The NFL has been consistent about this. There were 13 Pittsburgh Steelers that got fined for doing this in a celebration back in 2022. So you can't do that. It makes the extra point, the go-ahead extra point from Young Haeku, a 48-yarder, and of course he sinks it, because as we have talked about, no kicker misses anything anymore. And the Falcons go up 22-21 with 34 seconds left in the game. Nick Sirianni with the malpractice of all time. You cannot throw the football there. I'm sorry, you can't, no matter how easy it sounds. The only thing you can't have there is the clock stopping, and the incomplete pass made it stop. Now, 34 seconds left. There's one more thing to talk about with the Eagles. They get the ball. They got 2 timeouts. They just need a field goal. Goddard for 13. Timeout. 27 seconds left. Then they're at their own 43 at this point. So for Jake Elliott to be in field goal range, Jake Elliott is great. You get 20 more yards from your 43. That's a 54-yard field goal for Elliott. You get 15 more yards as a 59er. But let's just say it's 20 yards and you get a 54. That's kind of chip shotty for Elliott. I hate to say it. Sure, you could miss it, but you know how it goes these days. And Elliott has shown a propensity in his career to hit really long clutch field goals to win games, even north of 60 yards. So you only need 15, 20 more yards. And then Hurts goes deep, like you didn't need all that on the play. And it's picked off by Jesse Bates. Ball game. 785 more survivor entries. Toast. And Nick Sirianni costs his team the game, in my opinion. Saves the Falcons' season, perhaps, with that decision, as the Falcons go to 1-1. And I just cannot believe what it was that we saw. That was not even, Kelly, in my thinking, or that was even a possibility that he would call a pass there. And yet he did. Just run the ball, tuchus push it, whatever you need to do, but you can't do that.
Yeah, the I find the field goal conversation almost more interesting.
It's a fascinating
because
one.
Because like you said, we've been talking for I mean, multiple weeks now about how these kickers from 50 plus are automatics. That part becomes, you're going to hate me a little bit. If I'm making the calls, it is run, run. It is run on third, run on fourth. At third and three, and with the tush push, everything that the Eagles got, they got one of the best offensive lines in the league. You got a stud running back who's looked like a stud all game. I'm running it, and I'm running it twice, and I'm not even thinking about it.
Why would I hate you for that?
Why you're going to hate me is because if Saquon Barkley makes a catch that he's made 1,000 times before in the flat, this isn't even a conversation.
That's not the point.
Someone
said this on Twitter,
it's
too.
Not the point.
That's not the point. There is a risk-reward assessment you have to make. The possibility exists that that ball gets dropped, and it's 40 more seconds for the Falcons.
Yeah, I agree.
That shifts the win probability dramatically. You can't do that. I wasn't even thinking there was even a possibility. And Sirianni's like, watch this, buddy.
Oh, no. Nick Sirianni was glad to throw it on Kellen Moore after the game.
Saquon Barkley, I didn't even know this stat. Saquon Barkley, 16 drops. They put this up on the screen yesterday. 16 drops since 2021, most of any running back in the NFL. But even without that, that's not the point. The point is you don't even allow for that possibility to happen. They did. Eagles lose. Falcons win. And a whole bunch of survivors go down with them. More on this. All your tweets next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game live at Circa. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. Let me quantify what we were just talking about with Sirianni's decision. Next gen stats. The Falcons had just a 0.7% chance of winning with 1:56 left in the fourth quarter, according to the NGS win probability model. The comeback is the seventh most improbable win in the next gen stats era since 2016. Seventh most improbable win.
Oh, man.
So again, for those who are like, I don't know, I kind of like the pass. No, I'm sorry.
Hey, Gil, it's a great play running on fourth down after you run the ball on third. If you don't make it.
Oh, my God. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. And as you imagine, there's a whole bunch on this, which I love. DJ Slybri. Oh, Slybri. He's a big Eagles fan. He says, more interested in winning with pizzazz than just running the ball and clock. Talking about Sirianni. More interested in winning with pizzazz than just running the ball and clock. And there was no need for that low percentage throw for the killer INT. You don't need to get to the 20 for Elliott either. The 35 would have gotten done. Multiple fireable offenses. Yeah. Preach indeed from DJ Slybri. This is from Buddhist Man. Kicking the field goal is the worst of all the decisions. Taking the three there forces Atlanta to go for the win as opposed to playing for the field goal to tie. Exactly what we said. Yes. Drew Robb, 591-90973, because 591-90972 was taken. Just run the ball and take the 45 seconds off the clock. That's Kellen Moore trying to be cute and failing miserably. But earlier, take the field goal on the second drive, and it's a moot point also. We mentioned that. A lot of people are going to go back to the first quarter, and I agree with that. That's why I reviewed it, because fourth and four in a scoreless game, get 3 points. Why not?
It was like fourth and four, like at the nine?
At the nine.
Something like that? Yeah, I'm kicking there.
Alex Ivanov, 904, average 5.5 yards per carry, but yeah, let's throw it. LOL. We pointed that out as well. DJ Slybri came back with, he goes, if I wasn't at the game in an Eagles lifer, I'd tweet Mario Cristobal is laughing at the end of the game, coaching by Sirianni. This from, you can just roll through these guys, Jay Good, 96. The malpractice was forcing it into double coverage with a timeout 15 yards from field goal range. Yeah, all of our points here. Mike Stack, S19. If I'm the owner, he's fired. 100, gone. No more. I'm sorry. Well, we already said before the year that because he's got two new coordinators in Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio, he might be the weird guy that has a line to being fired first. That didn't help. BG Linhart, two tush push, Gilly. Two tush push.
I'm with it, Brent.
You're right, man. Yeah. That's the point. Our own Matt Brown. Matt Brown, M2. Hertz was averaging 6.5 yards per carry. It's a no-brainer. He's right. Matt Brown also believes in the fact that you shouldn't have kicked the field goal there either. Alexandra.
Really?
Oh, this. Yeah, he says. He says, "Don't kick the field goal." He's right. Because it changes how a team then plays the next drive. By the way, yeah. I mean, we didn't make enough of that. Like, the Eagles just went to a sieve at that point. Not that they were great defensively all game, because Bijan was killing them. Yeah. Bijan with 14 carries, not 15. I know somebody had the prop at 14 and a half, and he just fell short of 100 yards. But I mean, that was unbelievable. Kirk Cousins was just unpressured the whole way down. This is a great one. Alex Apostolos. I knew there would be one person. Holy crap, Philadelphia got a first down at the 2-minute warning with the lead and field goal range, and I turned it off. What? Yeah, it's not, you know, you probably shouldn't turn those off. Tony's Market Stable. Okay, this is, let's segue into Survivor with this, guys. Congrats on the Survivor win. Thank you. By the way, can I get my Survivor? I didn't get my Survivor sounder from yesterday. I'm a survivor. Thank you very much. According to Survivor Atlas, this is from Tony's Market Tips, but according to Survivor Atlas, this was before last night's game, Kelly. We're talking about Circus Survivor now. 14 people had all 10 entries on the Texans, including Sean Perry, our poker guy from last year, the villain, who made himself the villain anyway, and former Circa champ Love My Baxter. They had all 10 entries on the Texans. Two people had 9 of their 10 entries on the Texans. Only 163 contestants have 5-plus entries. Only 96 contestants, have 6-plus entries. 30 contestants still have 10 entries. Now, that could have changed after last night. I don't have the update, but let me give you where it stands, because when I updated Survivor yesterday, Kelly, I mean, that is so 2000 late at this point. Because the Eagles, 785 entries gone with that Nick Sirianni-induced loss yesterday. So here are the updated Circus Survivor numbers are incredible. Again, 14,266 entries to begin with. The first week, 39% got bounced. This week, of the remaining entries, 55.45% of the entries got bounced. So it's 5,564 total in week one, 4,825 in week two. That means out of the 14,266, only 3,877 remain, meaning that 72.82% of all entries are gone after 2 weeks. 72.82%. Last year at this point, after 2 weeks, it was 35.99% gone. 2 years ago, however, it was a shade more by percentage. There was only 6,133 at that point, but 74.73% had been eliminated after 2 weeks 2 years ago. So we are right on the cusp of the most carnage in Survivor history, a Circus Survivor history, but not quite. Not quite after last night.
It's incredible.
But given that there were 14,266 and there's only 3,877 left, that is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's just crazy with Survivor where we're at.
One more tweet we have to give. We talked about Matt Brown, we had to give Dave Ross equal time. Our own Dave Ross. No, Gil. He must stay. Them's the rules.
He's Sirianni being fired?
Yes, he's a Cowboys fan. Dave is a Cowboys fan. So he's like, no, he must stay. Them's the rules. He wants Sirianni to stay forever.
Assuming I heard some of those post-game clips correctly, I think the worst thing he did was blame it on Kellen Moore. He, like, blamed the play call on Kellen Moore. You're the head coach, man.
It's brutal.
I mean, like, those are the things of, like, why someone's on the hot seat, like, that as much as anything. Like, are you okay? You're not going to take accountability for anything you do? Wow.
It's not good. Not too good.
I don't know how many games there were this week, man, of, like, the, like, you and I were texting a little bit yesterday. I was rewatch the fourth quarter of that Texans game. You're just like, how does this happen? Like, you just, like, walk away from some of these games. And, like, last night, it's like, did I really just see a Falcons victory? Like, how did that happen like that?
It's amazing, too, because I was going off on Sean Payton yesterday, and all it took was one more game to wipe Sean Payton off the Dumbo of the week, right? And you point out that also, that the Sunday night game, the Texans were up 9 with the ball at the 4-yard line.
4-yard line? Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it should have been an easy-peasy cover. Instead, they were, like, fighting for even the win at the end and Survivor entries. Anyway, that's the NFL, man.
I'm ready to move on to week 3. That is for sure. Holy cow.
Before we do that, can we look at a few awards? Because we mentioned this briefly yesterday. You know, specifically about Offensive Rookie of the Year. Like, are we sure this is going to be a quarterback? But let's look at all these, Kelly, real quick.
We can run MVP first.
Let's do MVP first. Yeah, NFL MVP right now, which, again, Cleve T.A. did such a great job giving us the parameters of that and who can and who cannot win. If we could throw that up on the screen, guys, that'd be great for MVP. this is, you know, one of these categories where it's not quite as interesting as the others. But Patrick Mahomes, you know, sort of de facto, can we give him the MVP every single year that he even exists? He's at plus 370. Josh Allen's 4-1. CJ Stroud, plus 550. I remember when we did our quarterback rankings in the offseason, I'm like, he's conservatively a top five quarterback. He is. He was number five on my list, plus 550. By the way, Hurts is 12-1. No. Burrow and everybody else, 20-1 or longer. Do you like anything here?
No, not at all.
I don't either.
Not at all, because I think that is, I mean, like, it is week two, Gil, but man, it feels like one of those guys at the top, one of those three guys at the top.
It's not a very exciting category right now.
Right, exactly.
Offensive rookie of the year. By the way, the MVP trends that Cleve was talking about, 11 straight and 16 of the last 17 MVPs have been quarterbacks, and those teams have averaged over 13 wins in their MVP season. No MVP in the last seasons came from a team with less than 11 wins, eventually, and the average preseason win total for the teams has been 10 wins with a floor of 8.5 wins. So if your pre-flop season win total was below 8.5 to begin with, you ain't winning this. Thank you to Cleve for that, for the guardrails on that. Real quick now, rookie of the year. We openly ask, can this year where it's not a quarterback? Marvin Harrison Jr. and Jaden Daniels now co-short shots at plus 250 each. Jaden Daniels done more with his legs than his arm at this point. Caleb is plus 350. He was the short shot all offseason. Malik Nabers, the only one in single digits at plus 750, and your guy, Xavier Worthy's at 13-1.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to make a bet now, would there be one?
I mean, if I had to make one now, it'd be on Jaden Daniels still.
Still.
I still think he's got the best shot at winning this, just because the legs matter so much with the counting stats at the end of the year. If I had to, I would not make a bet right now. I have Worthy and Keon Coleman tickets, which I guess are still live and I'm liking. But if I had to make a bet right now, it'd be Jaden.
And I have Jaden. I want to go all defensive or offensive here, guys. Let's go defensive since it's up on the screen. Defensive rookie of the year, your guy, FSU grad, Jared Verse is 4-1. Okay, let's go offensive rookie of the year. Let's do that. Wherever you guys want to go.
I think Verse is rightfully rightfully is there.
Yeah, okay. So Jared Verse is the short shot for defensive rookie of the year and offensive rookie of the year. Excuse me, for defensive rookie of the year, it's Jared Verse. Would you make a bet? Dallas Turner's 5-1, Byron Murphy 7-1, Laiatu Latu 8-1, everybody else double digits.
No, I think you got to, I mean, look, I think it would be one of those top two guys, or you're waiting a little bit. Some of these guys still finding their footing and where exactly they're going to be on these defenses.
Okay. We'll take a look at coach of the year, because I think that's where it gets interesting. We'll do that on the other side. Will Hill with all of his bets, week three in the National Football League and beyond. Maybe some baseball, maybe some college football. It's a numbers game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on a numbers game live at Circa. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin on a Tuesday morning. Still with a Nick Sirianni fallout. Let's do a little change of pace. We haven't had this gentleman on in a long time, and that is our oversight, not his. I always introduce him by saying, as I mean this, he is the greatest sports talk radio host there ever was. I will not be debated on this subject. When he used to host All Night with Todd Wright back in the halcyon days of ESPN Radio, he now has a couple podcasts. One is the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast. The other is his Survivor Podcast, which we'll get into in this segment as well. He won fantasy leagues, I know, 2021, 2023. He also is a commissioner of fantasy leagues, which he rules with an iron fist. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the great Todd Wright, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, Todd?
Thank you for the praise, Gil, and thank you for the Iron Fist reference. I really appreciate that.
It's you and Khrushchev. You guys have a monopoly on it, the both of you.
Thank you.
Yes. You're very welcome. Let's start with, can I start with just sort of the, let's do the basic first, which is all of these injuries. I don't want to be prisoner of the moment. Has there ever been a year with more injuries to big time players this early? And then specifically, what do you do about Debo and CMC in San Francisco? What do you do about A.J. Brown in Philadelphia? What do you do about the Nacua Cup injuries in Los Angeles?
There probably has been a bigger year, but we're living in the moment. We want to make it feel worse than it actually is, and we actually have to do something about it. So like you brought up how Survivor, and I know we're going to talk about that. There was 2 years ago, it was as bad or worse based on some of the data. So my first reaction is, as I talked to you guys in the last 24 hours, this was why your draft had so many rounds. Your replacement for, say, a Cooper Kupp should be someone you already had on your team that you drafted 2, 3, 4 weeks ago and didn't cut for some reactive reason after week one. I'll give you just one example because I was very invested in Kupp this year. Love the results week one. Now I'm scrambling, but I just slide Jameson Williams into his spot for week three because I drafted Jameson Williams in a mid to late round to take that risk. Keep this in mind, Gil and Kelly, on fantasy football. Like we saw last night, loved all the Sirianni talk, by the way, so far today. We saw last night, the Eagles don't have presumably a next man up for AJ Brown, right? For those that rush to pick up Dotson, what'd you get? The great thing about fantasy football is the Eagles had one group of players to pick from last night. As a fantasy owner, you have 32 to pick from to replace AJ Brown. So you have a bigger group to try to find that player if you didn't already draft him.
Yeah, Kelly put together a nice little list of players, quarterback, wide receiver, running back, and tight end for those watching. All these players perhaps available.
Yes, perhaps. Yeah.
I was amused by that, Todd, when some of these fantasy services are like available in 75% of leagues. It's like, what league would have these guys available in that high of a percentage? Let me ask you some macro stuff. One is tight ends with just complete lack of production in the first couple weeks of fantasy football. What do you do about that? Targets are way down. It's kind of inexplicable, but you had a tight end philosophy, I remember, a couple years ago already.
Well, this is my iron fist, yeah, which many people have disagreed with. I eliminated the mandatory tight end in all my leagues 10 years ago because I didn't feel there were enough worthy people on a week-to-week basis to play that position to justify it. And honestly, Gil, and I'm sure you and Kelly feel this way, there are certain questions you get from great listeners on a regular basis, and you just roll your eyes, not because of the listeners, but because of the question. So the questions that I have eliminated over the last 10 years, once we get to bye weeks, is, hey, what do I do at the tight end position? And my first response is, well, if you had eliminated the mandatory tight end, we wouldn't be wasting our time on this. Because annually, there's only a handful of tight ends that put up the equivalent of wide receiver one, wide receiver two, wide receiver three numbers. And tight ends, including Travis Kelce, off to a very slow start this year. And even in Isaiah Likely, who many jumped on week two waivers, trying to get the bump off week one, didn't see it in week two.
If you had to break down by percentage, fantasy football success, draft, waiver wire trades, give me the pie chart of that.
Okay. So my fantasy title last year, I think I won it with how I drafted in the first six rounds. Like Ayuk was a sixth round pick, McCaffrey at number one overall when most didn't want the spot or took Justin Jefferson. And there were good picks in between, but I picked up Kyren Williams twice on waivers because I let him go and then got him again after a week in advance from him coming back being hurt. Picked up Stafford and Love for the postseason run when I needed a quarterback after mine went down in Joe Burrow. So I'll say it's 60% of your draft, mostly at the top of the board. It's 20 to 30% in how you work waivers, in finding players to help you on either an every so often week or finding a consistent starter on waivers like many found years ago when Alvin Kamara was a rookie, or last year with Kyren Williams when we knew he was going to get that workload. And honestly, Gil, 10 to 20% is just luck. That's it, because that factors in obviously to picking against the line, picking totals, picking futures. You have to factor that in here in fantasy as well.
All right, I'll ask you this last fantasy question on the way out because I want to talk Survivor, but I've asked you this before, but I want a refresher. If someone sends you an offensive trade offer in fantasy, do you A, ignore it, B, berate him publicly in the chat room of said fantasy league, or three, send him back an equally offensive trade offer?
It's three and you know, with the value of 9 seasons of my fantasy football podcast, which amazingly, Gil, I've done as many seasons of this fantasy podcast as ABC ordered for The Love Boat and NBC ordered of Seinfeld. So I feel very validated.
Yeah.
I feel very validated that I've gotten as many seasons as Captain Steubing and Kramer. So I do 3 and then I use the bad trade as material on the podcast to shame the person that proposed the bad trade to one of my listeners.
I like it. By the way, I had no idea The Love Boat was only on for 9 seasons. It feels like it was on for 15. Yeah.
I was so that guy, by the way. Would always be the bad trade.
It was all the appearances of Charo that threw you off, Gil. That's what it was.
Charo and Dennis Cole. They showed up every 3 weeks for some reason. All right, Survivor. I know you have some, you obviously have the Fantasy Football Podcast. You also have the Survivor Podcast, available where all podcasts are distributed. You have thoughts about week 3. Who are you considering?
I even asked you.
Yes.
I said, this is real-time stuff for your listeners. I said to you after I recorded the podcast yesterday, and I use a lot of what you and Kelly talk about on A Numbers Game on the podcast. And I said, Gil, top 5 Survivor plays early look this week. And I ran down Jets, Bucks, Bills, anti-Miami play, anti-Carolina play. And you said, I think the Bengals are going to be top 3. So back at you. I mean, Gil, where's the numbers? I have them right here. 4,895 people in the circuit pool are saying to you, are you crazy thinking the Bengals are going to win even if it's against Washington? Do you really feel that they will be that high of a play after what they've done the first 2 weeks and just how toxic things look with Ja'Marr Chase, with T. Higgins, the bad penalty on the 4th and 16. We know the Bengals are better than a 0-2 team, but do you really want to put your investment in them this week? I don't have them as a top 5 play, but
really?
You think they're a top 3?
I think they're a top 3. I said earlier, I've got now that the Panthers have made the shift at quarterback, I feel like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who would have played, obviously, the Panthers twice, once at home later, I think they come back into play this week. I think the Browns are a play. And I do think the Bengals, the part of that calculus.
I know what Todd's talking about, though.
But,
yeah.
But the part of the calculus that you left out is that I am a self-hating Washington Commodes fan. So obviously, I think the Bengals are a top 3 pick. Yeah.
Yeah. Kelly seems to be with me that it's like in fantasy where from a previous year, if you have a player that let you down, there's scar tissue that lingers into future years. And when we see what the Bengals did in week 1, even just talking Survivor 2 weeks later, we're unwilling to go back to that. So that's my emotion after the Bengals knocked me out, as it's your emotion against Washington. Although I am a big believer in Jaden Daniels, especially from a fantasy standpoint, and he has treated me well. One more thing on Andy Dalton going in back to fantasy. I see Adam Thielen available in 75% of Yahoo leagues. And with Andy Dalton out there, that's some value on the waiver wire, just as Carolina suddenly might not be an anti-play and Survivor.
I like it.
Good
when last seen, Adam Thielen was wide open and not getting a pass from Bryce Young. That's for sure.
Combined age of those two, roughly 87 years old.
That's right. Todd, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Love you guys. Thank you for having me on.
The great Todd Wright. Love you back, man. Right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Paul Spohr on baseball next.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget, after A Numbers Game, top of the hour, Money Moves with Stormy Bonatoni. Stormy's guest today, once again, the great Jeff Schwartz. How about that? Stormy and Jeff on Money Moves for a couple hours, then Prop Points with John Hansen, followed by Make It Rain with Adam Schein from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern. That's VSiN's schedule against Stormy and Jeff right after Kelly and I have decided to evacuate the studio.
Decided.
It's a decision.
It's a decision. It is quite the, this is like pit. What is it? Pit lane, Wyatt? Is that what we call it?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
The pit crew, right? Yeah. It is like, it's like changing tires in here real quick, getting us out and getting her in and settled and everything.
Yeah. Well, at least
we're not used to it. That we had for as much as we might have complained about past setups, we had all the time in the world to get in and out of the D, that's for sure.
Well, we sure did. That we did. Most of the Twitter feedback is all, you know, is on Survivor. It's the most amazing thing is we can talk about, you know, Sirianni, we can talk about any number of subjects, but daily, if you did the pie chart of the percentage of Survivor focused tweets, it's got to be about 40% every day, no matter what we're talking about. And it's different opinions, right? As far as the Bengals, Rich PSM says, Bengals Survivor, remember they crushed the Rams on Monday night without a win last year. They looked much better versus Kansas City. Got to be desperate, by the way. I, too, enjoyed Mr. Wright. Maybe a long, late drive home after failed dates back in the day for all night with Todd Wright. So he Rich PSM believes that Cincinnati is a viable pick, whereas Chris Hartman says, Gil, 78% of all Survivor knockouts have come at the hands of the AFC North. Difficult to jump on Cleveland or Cincy this week. So both sides of that as well. And everybody's got their takes on it. So week three, for those who are still alive, and not only Circus Survivor, but your Survivor pool, good luck to you here heading into what is never easy in the National Football League. All you have to do is hit a 20-team moneyline parlay in Circa. That's all you have to do.
It's not that hard.
To get to the promised land. It's not, come on, 20.
The one guy at Hard Rock hit all 16 in week one. That's easy.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's like $25 into whatever, hundreds of thousands.
Should have bet more.
Yeah, should have bet more.
There you go, Will. Okay, before we get to the segment that everybody loves, which is Kelly Bidlin's college football guessing line segment for the week, I just want to, I mentioned this earlier, so I want to pay off the tease. I bet a Heisman Trophy player. I bet a guy to win the Heisman Trophy at 1,000-1 yesterday here at Circa. Any guesses as to who that was?
Yeah.
I'm asking you.
No.
let me just tell you, it was
not Jackson Dart.
It was 1,000-1 when
not
I bet.
Cam Ward.
It is okay. I moved it. I apparently moved it from 1,000-1 to 80-1.
Wow, bro.
Let me just tell you how this went down. I tried to put a certain amount of money on it, and they made me wait for a good 7 to 10 minutes.
Ooh, a real long wait for you.
It was an eternity. It was at least 5 minutes.
You did this here?
Here, right after the show. After I talked to you, I went to my car. I'm like,
you doubled back?
I would double back. That's
wow.
Right. Wow. So they...
That's how much he likes it.
They didn't allow me...
He was all the way to the
By the way, they're probably saving me money, right? It's 1,000-1. It's not probably not going to win. Anyway, the player is Eli Holstein, Pitt Panthers. 1,000-1, I thought, was a number that I had to take a shot at. Eli Holstein.
Quarterback?
By the way, yes, he's a quarterback, Kelly. He was at Alabama. He transferred.
Okay.
And by the way, has not declared whether he's in the tribe or not. I'm just assuming. Which is not really why I made the bet. I should point out that's not why I made the bet. But Eli Holstein has thrown for 300 yards in each of the Panthers' first three games. He has engineered two straight comebacks. Once again, a couple weeks ago against the Bearcats in Cincinnati, and then this past week against a down two scores late against West Virginia. How did he do this? But Eli Holstein brings the Panthers back to victory, 38-34 over West Virginia in that rivalry. So the thinking here is obviously 300 a game. That's great. The comeback, spectacular. But Pitt's schedule is not the worst in the world. Like, it's kind of manageable. And if Pitt can get themselves into an ACC title game, it's not the most outlandish thing in the world. Anyway, that's the bet. 1,000-1 on Eli Holstein. Would I bet it at 80-1? Probably not.
You know what's the saddest part is I actually watched a very, very good chunk of that West Virginia Pitt game.
Oh, it's fantastic.
And I was not kidding when I just asked you about quarterback. I assumed he was, but yeah, I watched that
so
game.
So you watched
didn't pick up on the fact, yes, that was the kid's name.
I called it before. I'm like, Eli Holstein about to win this game. And he did. So that was the bet in college football. And now, ladies and gentlemen, because I do an NFL guessing lines that Kelly has to endure for 2 hours. Ladies and gentlemen, Kelly Bidlin and college football guessing lines.
Oh, yeah. I was just trying to figure out how week one went.
Yeah,
I can't really track that information right now. I should have said that earlier. Week two, though. Here we go. Week two of college football guessing lines.
Can I give the background on this once again? For those who are just tuning in for the first time? This segment is born out of the fact that when we were at the South Point, Kelly was rushing in between segments to get a segment together. And quickly he was like, hey, Gil, what was the line in that one college football game? And I go, 14. And there was this awkward pregnant pause.
Punching something into a graphic, I think. Yeah.
Awkward pregnant pause. And then Kelly says to me, plus or minus. And at that point, I realized that while Kelly loves his NBA, loves his golf, bets him great, loves his football, college football, not so much.
I love college football. I just, God bless everybody out there that tries to handicap it every single year with all these players moving all over the place.
All right, you ready?
Like your guy.
By the way.
Eli
Holstein. do you know how you did in the first week? No? You were just saying?
No,
you
know, so I was trying to track it down real quick.
I don't know what we're keeping because you're not making, you're just guessing a lot.
Well, it's always kind of more like, you know, who was further off, Kelly or the book.
All right.
Right?
You ready?
So it's that, yeah.
NC State at Clemson. Speaking of the ACC.
Okay. Big ACC game here, I think. Clemson was, you know, highly touted preseason. So was NC State a little bit. Clemson averaging over 34 points a game. You got NC State 0-3 ATS so far. 3-16 straight up going back their last 19. You got McCall is doubtful. I believe that's true. That's what I read yesterday, at least, that Grayson McCall is doubtful, which sounds massive because he was actually a name that I know that plays quarterback in college football. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go Clemson laying 27 here. It's got to be something big. I just don't know if I'm big enough or too big here.
27 from Kelly Bidlin on Clemson, and the answer is
actual retail price.
20 and a half. Like 27. Easy, buddy. 20 and a half is the price. So you, sir, see tremendous value on the Wolfpack of NC State, is what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, that graphic disagrees with what I just said about NC State, but okay.
Does it? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
maybe. Wait, does this say 0-3 ATS? We got cameras in
it. It does.
Okay, no, that's what I said then. That's what I said. Everybody, I thought I said 1-3.
Everybody should know. The biggest cultural difference for us between the D and circa, you would think, is the noise that's around us now in an antiseptic studio.
We're just adjusting to the studio.
It's just that everything is an obstructed view in here. We all bought obstructed view seats. Okay, number two.
I don't know how these guys do it at night.
You didn't do so good on that one.
Okay, oh, number two.
By the way, we have the TVs for everything else up here.
Speaking of Florida State.
Okay. We often at the D, because I would look past you and the screens would be there, and ESPN would, you know, they'd fill their talk shows with the most ridiculous topic bars, right? And topics that they would discuss for an entire segment.
Yeah, we would often chuckle about it, not mention them on air often.
This morning's might have taken the cake, which is, can 0-3 Florida State still make the playoff? And they spent 15 minutes on that. Come on, man. Speaking of FSU, speaking of FSU, Kelly, an FSU grad, allegedly.
Oh, it's brutal.
Allegedly. Cal at Florida State, 3-0 against 0-3.
Hey, I graduated. My mother has that diploma in a safe somewhere. It is not coming out of that safe because, yeah, she likes to hold on to that thing. It took 5 years, okay? It's not like I flew through there. Florida State, 15.3 points per game. Not a doctor, also. 0-3 ATS. I wanted to look this one up. You know the ATS plus minus, right? How much?
Oh, yes.
Above or below.
I like that.
They are minus 19.8. So they are falling below the spread, below the coverage by almost 20 points per game. That is impressive. Cal rolling, 131-10 against San Diego State. 21-14 over Auburn, SEC win. I'm going to take that as pretty impressive. Florida State looked like absolute garbage. I'm assuming they were big favorites preseason in this game. It's got to be Cal favorite now. I'm going Cal laying 3 in this matchup at Florida State at the Doak. Cal walking in, laying 3 points.
That's a Doak. Dr. Bob's Cal Bears against Kelly Bidlin's FSU Seminoles. The actual spread is Florida State -2. Sorry.
Still favorite.
Wrong team favorite is what you're saying.
Can't bet on that team, man. You cannot bet on that team.
Speaking
right
of
now.
Wrong team favorite, you see how I guess the Saints were 2.5-point favorite yesterday and the Eagles were favorites, and now it's the Saints -2.5. It's like I can guess.
To your right.
It's like I can guess well.
To your exact point.
Yep. And the last one here, Kelly, so far not so good, by the way. Last one, UCLA at LSU.
Okay, I got absolutely no idea here. I think what really threw me off was we were just talking about Wes Reynolds going over to this game, UCLA stomping Indiana last week. So I'm going LSU laying 17 as I'm running out of time. I've got more written down, but LSU laying 17, actual retail price, 24.5.
Yeah. You were great there. Not so great there.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like that's average for me. High expectations.
Not so great. By the way, right. Indiana crushed UCLA, not the way you said it. You said UCLA crushed him.
Sorry, UCLA got stomped by
him. We've done all we can do. Stormy is next.